This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN? Oh, what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found — I am not a therapist — I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it, and sometimes it makes you realize, like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 404, brought to you by iFanboy listeners, not unlike yourselves.
You hit me once, I hit you back. You gave a kick, I gave a slap. You smashed a plate over my head. Then I set fire to our bed. Oh, my black eye casts no shadow. Your red eye sees no blame. Your slaps don't stick, your kicks don't hit, so we remain the same.
Hey, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 404, error. My name is Paul Montgomery. That was a funny joke. My name is Paul Montgomery, and joining me are Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
And this week's special guest host, Josh Flanagan. This
will be your blue screen episode.
We are iFanboy, and we like comics, and every week we read a bunch of comics, and one of us picks the best book that they read. We call that the Pick of the Week, and we talk about it on this here podcast, along with various other books of the week and various other topics of interest and all kinds of nonsense. You know the drill. Before we get to the show, word of caution, this is a review show, and we will be talking about the things that happened in this week's books. So if you're worried about spoilers, pause, collect yourselves, come back, we'll be ready for you. This week, Joshua had the pick. What'd you like?
I read several books, and here are my disclaimers before we get going. Villains Month is mostly stupid.
Yeah.
I'm very angry about the lack of creator credit on the cover. from a industry standpoint and from a practicality standpoint.
Yeah, it's hard to know who you're getting into.
I don't want to have to pick up every damn book.
Right.
So I feel more like I'm missing stuff. Anyway, I went with
sometimes the credits are in the front, sometimes the credits are in the back. Oh, and you're like, what is
they're,
this?
They're mostly in the back. Also, I hate the number that I'm about to say. Actually, I'll just say Lex Luthor number one, Action Comics, and
23.3. Josh,
Jesus, fuck is that? That's just terrible. But that's
like 23.1 is bad enough.
I wish they'd gone with fractions instead. Like let Marvel have the decimal point, and
yeah,
DC could go with like Action Comics 23 3/4.
They could have done something cool with that in the Mad Hatter one. I mean, come on. Do I got to tell you everything? They should do that, by the way. This is basically a day in the life of Lex Luthor story. And I liked it simply because it was very comfort foody in the superhero sense. Written by Charles Soule with pencils by Raymond Bermudez. Be honest, the art was fine. It does, you know, it's DC.
I mean, it was good. I found nothing wrong with the art. I thought it did its job. It told the story. But
yeah,
really the thing, and Paul, I don't know if you want to back me up on this, but when you saw what Josh's pick was, you did like the dog head tilt. What? But this was really good. And, you know, problems with the whole thing aside, like Josh mentioned, we've talked about it in the last 2 weeks. I'm not going to talk about it anymore. But this day in life story was really fun. And I think Lex Luthor's that kind of character where...
Oh, yeah.
As a writer, you can really dig your, it's red meat. You can dig your teeth into that. And, you know, there's been lots of great Lex Luthor one-shots over the years. John Byrne did a very famous one where he fucked with that waitress at a diner in a small town. And
oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, you can do those really great, isn't this man awful stories.
The thing is, it harkened me back to the Paul Cornell Action Comics series from not too long ago. And I really enjoyed that. And it felt like that kind of thing. And... you're right. I think it's just Lex Luthor really lends himself to a one shot. And the thing about this whole Villains Month that's good is that, you know, we don't get single issue stories all that often.
Right.
And I really like them.
There's been a couple of good ones we're going to talk about, one or two of them on the show.
Yeah. I really like that as a format for comics. I wish it was done more often because it puts you in a box that you can just live in and you don't have to worry about trying to sell them on the next thing or whatever. You just tell your one day story. And this all, you know, the other thing is I felt that Lex Luthor is one of those characters who can fluctuate between evil and cold, but not necessarily evil. Mm-hmm. And I don't mind the inconsistency between writers on that. I like – it's like Batman. You know, you can kind of do whatever you want with it. But this is like a – he's a jerk at the very least. You know, he's a jerk in this and he's pretty evil.
There's a continuum, a Lex Luthor continuum, if you look at all the different media he's been in. Mm-hmm. It's on one end you have the guy who wants to do well, and it's about feeding his ego and his hatred for Superman. And then the other side of the continuum is cold-blooded murderer, megalomaniac, you know, dictator, which is, I think it works on all those spectrums.
Yeah. For me, it's really fun to read different takes on that because they're the same character, but they're not. There's different nuances, and everybody does it kind of – they do their own little take on it. You know, the last Lex Luthor story I read was Birthright, and, you know, that's a
The last one you read in terms of literal time, not like
yes.
– you haven't read one in 10 years.
No, the last big Lex Luthor story I read was literally Birthright, which I had never read before. So that's a fairly sympathetic – version of Lex, even though he's still a dink.
Right.
And then this one, there's still something about a character who is ultimately competent and confident. He's confident. He's both of those things.
He's a David Mamet character.
But in a bad way, which is interesting.
Yeah.
You know, like there's really nothing. And then, you know, there's I don't know what's good. If there's a larger thing, why Superman's not. Is that the thing with the villains?
In the Villains Month, it's that.
They're just gone.
The crime syndicate has shown up and claim to have killed all the Justice League, and so they haven't been seen in a while.
Well, whatever,
so the
villains
are running rampant. Running rampant.
Whatever that reason is, it's interesting to remove Superman from the context, and that has nothing to do with it. You just, what would I do if Superman wasn't here? And further, we're going to talk about a bunch of Charles Soule books, and I'm really being impressed by him as a guy who, I know him, by the way. That's if anybody feels like nitpicking, but it doesn't matter because I don't read some stuff he writes, whatever. I really like him as a guy that is doing a lot of different things. I have 3 books on our list from him to talk about this week, and they're not similar to one another in any way. And also, in the current DC regime as it exists, like, he's getting interesting stuff through regularly.
Which
I think that's
unusual.
It almost makes me want to read his Red Lantern book. Not enough. I mean, like, I've stayed at his house and I won't read his Red Lantern's book. So what I'm saying is, like, it almost, the stuff's good enough that it almost makes me want to do that.
When you stay at his house, you don't use his toothbrush. So that, I think that's, you know,
yeah.
there's a line you don't want to cross.
Yeah, that's totally true. And it was just the once, and it was a floor. So, I mean, I don't know him that much.
This was really strong. I read it after you told us what the pick was. I wasn't planning on reading Action Comics 23.3, Lex Luthor, number one. But I was glad I did. It was really fun, as you said. He's just, as I say this, in the background on my TV, Superman, the movie's on, and I see Gene Hackman. But it's a great story, and he you're right. He's getting interesting stuff through, which has been unusual, and it's really fun. And he has a great take on these characters. It's a smart take.
I thought that, like, Lex came off as really smart, and not just in the terms of, like, he predicted everything and it was luck, but there seemed to be reasoning behind it. So,
he's got a plan. He's literally 15 steps ahead of everybody.
And the writer actually had to do that instead of cheating. Yeah. I thought so. That was really well thought out. I thought the choices that were made, where, you know, your comic book brain is totally wired to think, oh, these astronauts will be safe. They were not. And then at the end, like, there's just that one last, we'll call it a kick in the teeth, with the assistant, and like all of, like, every choice that was made was a bold choice and a correct choice, and I liked that. And I know that's like, oh, we're doing dark comics or whatever, but I don't care. It was really well executed, and it was just interesting. It was a fun supervillain comic.
I had to laugh at the newscaster who was wearing the short sleeve plaid shirt. I mean, I realize that budgets are are smaller now in the media world, but I think the newscasters could probably wear a suit.
I really liked the subplot of the guy trying to do the hostile takeover that was running through the whole thing, and at the very end, the shuttle landed on his house. I was like, boy, that's raw. I was super impressed with this issue, and it was fun. And on a week where everything was kind of meh, I was like, you know what? This was the one that surprised me the most. I like Lex Luthor. Like, that's a thing I've learned about myself. Like, you know, I don't want him all the time, like the Joker or whatever.
He's a great
He's a great character.
And I've totally been in the mood for good Superman stuff since that movie.
Yeah. Is Thunderbolts also Charles Soule?
Yeah.
Let's skip over the one in the top of the script here and move it down underneath Swamp Thing and talk about Thunderbolts 15, which I didn't read, but let's might as well talk about Charles. Let's have a Charles Soule block.
Yeah, I thought it could have gone either way. You break it up, you do it all at once. This is an odd Thunderbolts. Are you reading this, Paul?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, really, for me, the story's fine. It's funny. These characters don't quite sound like I think of them.
Right.
But I don't care about that so much anymore. But the thing that impressed me about this issue actually didn't have anything to do with Charles at all. Well, I mean, he was fine, but I thought the artist was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very sort of abstract, cartoony style. I'm going back to the beginning to see the name. Hefte Apollo.
Who is the what's the team lineup? Who are the characters?
It's the all merchandising lineup of Red Hulk, Punisher, Venom, Red Leader. Elektra, Deadpool, and whoever Mercy is.
Those are all ostensibly characters with red in their uniform? Well, not Punisher, though.
They put them in, though. Like when Punisher rolls with these guys, he puts on the red skull.
Right.
And you know, like the basic conceit is they're all doing a thing for each other. So this is Punisher's task, and he's got to go take out.
They're taking turns coming, like, being the lead on certain missions, and they're doing sort of like personal, like, now that they have a group to back themselves up, and they have the numbers, they're going after sort of the, you know, the ones that got away in terms of scores and capers and things.
Yeah, so like in this one, they're going after a mafia family that is secretly behind everything that nobody can find anything about and knows about. And it's kind of goofy. Like, it's totally lighthearted. You know, it's got Deadpool in it, and it actually fits to that kind of mold. So if you look at it's a lot funnier than some of them, like, you know, like Swamp Thing or Action Comics was, like, by a great deal. And it's a completely different tone. It's got Deadpool riding on the subway, and they're like, you're gonna walk around like that. He goes, it's all right, everybody thinks I'm Spider-Man. 2 out of 10 times I gotta fight Hydro Man, but it's no big deal.
Exactly.
They cut to him sitting on the subway, a little girl comes up to him and is like, are you Spider-Man? And he's like, my web things don't work. I ran out of money. She goes back to her mom. She gets a $10 bill and hands it to him. Like, it's just one of those, like, elevator shots. You know what
right.
I mean?
Yeah.
Ding. Hey. You know, that kind of thing. And it was goofy and it was fun. I really enjoyed it. And, you know, this book has had Phil Noto. It's just since Charles has taken over, it's had Phil Noto and then Steve Dillon. And this artist, I'll take over at either of them, at least for this story. Like, it
feels appropriate too.
Yeah, it feels right. Where
and these characters,
and like it's fun. It's just goofy, and I have so much more need of that in my life than I used to. And like before, I would have read something like this, and I'd be like, this doesn't sound like Elektra at all. And I just don't care.
5 years ago, I never would have said you would have read a book starring Elektra, Deadpool, Punisher. Red Hulk,
right?
I'm not going to lie. At this point, this was one that I bought because I knew the guy. But I wouldn't have kept reading it, and I wouldn't be talking about it if I didn't like it.
And so. And it's important that it's like it's, you know, a million steps away from Jeff Parker's Thunderbolts.
Yes.
It's a totally different thing. And I wasn't reading this particular run until Charles Soule came on. But I love that it's a completely different take. I think that that's really, really important, because I would just be thinking about what, you know, it would have been like with Jeff Parker still on, although he had a long, healthy run of it.
Yeah, he did. You know, I don't feel like we were shortchanged on that one.
No, not at all.
I didn't need to read the Daniel Way one at all. I think literally my favorite thing about this is the exterior shot of the van, which is just like there's a shot of the, it's on page 3 or something like
oh,
that.
Yeah.
And it's just super, like the Punisher's van is really squat. And they're all like, why do you have this van? And he's like, I'm not going to take the subway.
So is it a comedy book?
It kind of is.
More than you would expect it to be?
Yeah. Like this one was all pretty much gags. It wasn't action.
And there's the sexual tension between Punisher and Elektra, which is an interesting pairing, I think.
Yeah, sure.
How long has Soule been on this book?
3 or 4 issues. I think 3. I think this is the third one.
I might go check it out.
So continuing the Charles Soule block, Swamp Thing 23.1.
Read the full title, Paul.
Arcane number 1.
There you go.
This was amazing. I think this is the best thing to come out of Forever Evil. And it's got one of my favorite artists who is always a pleasant surprise when he pops up, Jesus Says.
He's great. A little scratchier style for this one, which I liked.
Yeah, this is a rabbit gets ripped in half. This is a terrifying issue. Now, you know, the whole Rot World thing, it got a bit abstract for me, and I kind of lost the plot on, you know, Swamp Thing and Animal Man. I've read a few of the Charles Soule issues of Swamp Thing, but haven't been reading it steadily. This is another really great one-shot. It's a great character study for Anton Arcane and his niece. It's Abby Arcane, right? Who's the avatar of the Rot. And basically, he's kind of got this Hannibal Lecter role where he's in his idea of hell. So he's part of, in I guess, like the parliament. And so he's so
Vic Mackey at a desk job.
Exactly. He's basically in a world where nothing can rot. Everything is
it's like
eternal.
Disneyland.
It's Disneyland, and he's just this creepy looking corpse with one dead eye, and he's trying to tear apart rabbits, and there's nothing is decaying, nothing dies in this world, and as a former avatar of the Rot, this is his version of hell, and she comes, this like dark, you know, vision, kind of angelic, kind of demonic, comes in, and she wants to know about her past. She wants to know about her mother and the woman that raised her, who might not necessarily be the same person. And she gives him sort of a taste of the Rot because she's the only one capable of doing that here. And yeah, so it's sort of like this Silence of the Lambs kind of scenario. And it ends on a really just super creepy note. Where he gets sort of an eye into the real world.
I thought it was really cool how every time he reached out and got closer or touched her, he would literally like bulk up muscularly.
Right.
Like he's super dangerous and she can't really get near him, even though she's ostensibly more powerful.
She feeds off her. I think Soule's doing a really good job on Swamp Thing.
I
enjoyed it when Scott Snyder was writing it, but I really think Soule's tone is really more what I was looking for in the book. It's been really fun. This is one of the few times where the actual writer of the book has done the Forever Evil one shot.
Yeah, that's true.
which I think is important. And it fits. Like, I don't feel like I'm not reading this. I don't feel like it's diversion.
Yeah, so like, it feels like a, you know, it feels like it could be just a one shot.
It just goes back to part of the problem with this whole thing is you never know what you're going to get. And
right. Yeah. So it works as part of the story. It doesn't have really anything to do with, you know, the death of the Justice League and everything going on in the real world. He's just telling a Swamp Thing story and a showcase for Arcane, and it's appropriately creepy. It's sort of like some of the Forever Evil titles are just like, I'm gonna tell a badass story, and like people, like I'm gonna be shocking and like kill characters off, and like there's a market for that. A bunch of like third and fourth tier villains who have been offed in Forever Evil and just like decapitated and stuff and just some collateral damage. Whereas this, it doesn't feel forced. It just feels very appropriate to this character who, luckily enough, is very, very evil and very, very disturbing in his own right. So it just feels right. And the art is gorgeous. Jesus Says is always great, but this particular issue is just stunning and kind of haunting, kind of sticks with you, I felt.
Before we move on to Daredevil, I just really quickly mentioned the Batman one-shot, which was The Penguin, written by Frank Thierry. And it was sort of similar to the action one in that it was like a day in life of the Penguin as he did his bad Penguin stuff. It was also very good. So there's been some interesting stories. But Daredevil 31, Daredevil continues to fight the Sons of the Serpent, the white supremacists hate superhero group, supervillain group in the Marvel Universe. And couple of things. One, I like that Wade continues to play with the idea of what makes Daredevil's job hard, like the rain, or in this case, people keep showing him things on tablets or pieces of paper that he can't see.
Mm-hmm.
He's constantly bringing those things up that I didn't used to think about. Like,
it's cool because, you know, I think a lot of writers in the past have taken the, like, once he's Daredevil, they don't really
deal with
consider
it.
That. Yeah. they just think, well, it's pretty much like he can see. And he can't. Like, he's got challenges that are real mm-hmm. and that he has to deal with. And
well,
it was
like
the point where
a riot. There's just too much going. There's too much sensory input to figure out what's happening.
And I like that. Like, and it's funny because at a certain point, like, I'm starting to think about it. So, like, he took the cab, and I thought, I wonder what he paid that guy with. And I was like, well, you can't use the touchscreen.
Right.
You can't do the swipe. And, you know, then he's got to deal with his money.
But it's also not like entirely about that.
No, it's not. No, not at all.
It doesn't get in the
it's
way.
It's an aspect of the story.
Right. It's just keeping
it's
in
a nice
mind.
Balance.
Because the fact is, like, he's got a disability, and that's it would be wasteful to not deal with that. But he's not also making
it's also,
it up.
And it's also important that it's like he has this disability, but it's also, you know, on the other side, he has these augmented senses, and you could be, as a writer, you could be thinking about the character and what he's capable of, but you also have to be conscious of what other people think he's capable of.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Which, so like when they were going through the halls and you saw that sign and, you know, what level they're on, you have to be conscious of what other characters think he can do or mm-hmm. can't do, whatever.
Also, you would think that Alex P. Keaton as an adult would just look like Michael J. Fox.
No, he doesn't. Neither. Sally Draper.
Sally Draper?
She's not aged well.
Well, she's much older than Alex P. Keaton. If you're going to put joke names in, shouldn't you do the entire thing as a joke?
Yeah, I know. That's what I was thinking. I was like, do I not get the other 10 of these?
Right, yeah. I was like, am I missing something? Or is like this part of the joke?
I want to know who lettered this. Let's see. Okay, I'm going to ask. I'm going to ask and find out if those were in the script or those were put in later.
Yeah. Okay. It's just because they're like right next to each other.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then the other ones are anyways.
It made me laugh.
It's a very street level, even though they're dealing with a big, powerful criminal organization, it's a quote unquote street level book. Mm-hmm. And it's dealing with the city and real things in the city. One of the real things in the city is racial tension. I think it's a really interesting way that it sort of ties into, you know, news of the day.
Yeah.
But in a way that isn't ridiculous.
It's
doesn't
not hitting
really,
it right on the head. It's going from a different angle. It's the aftermath and all that stuff.
How that works with media. Like, he's just, he's thinking about a lot of things. This wasn't, I'm not going to like, this was an amazing issue. It wasn't
that,
but
it's a good
one,
though.
Yeah, it's impressive. And I just like, it's still, you know, what, 31 issues?
Yeah.
This is a hell of a run at this point.
It really is. And I don't know, you know, in this day and age, it's 31 is a crazy run for any one writer, especially.
Uh-huh. And just to stay on the top of the game like that, it's really impressive.
And I continue to really enjoy the Foggy story, Foggy's cancer. And I like that they have an argument. And he's like, that cancer is the only thing keeping you alive right now, because if you didn't have cancer, I'd be beating the shit out of you for bringing this woman into our offices and making it difficult for me. I think that's great. It's not, you know, there's been some really touching moments with that storyline, but it's never maudlin. It's never overwrought.
And that's great.
something that a friend would say to another friend. And you, it's also not the kind of thing you tend to see in cancery stories.
And again, the idea that Foggy gives the whole Cancer War Daredevil t-shirts as inspiration and Matt can't see them because he can't make out the details.
Yeah, so what's on those t-shirts? Yeah.
It was cool. I liked it. Now, speaking of things that were cool that I liked, Thor, the God of Thunder 13, I knew I was going to be fine when I saw the title page and it said The Great Niflheim Escape or The Svartalfheim Massacre.
You left an F out of that second word. Svartalfheim.
Listen.
Svartalfheim.
You're lucky I got any of those words out.
I love those words.
I do too. Niflheim.
This is the next art, and this arc, The Accursed, which is, you know, not the movie tie-in, but it's bringing back the character from the movie.
Which should suck.
But again,
it's
more about the fact that now we have a different artist, Ron Garney, who is one of my favorite all-time artists. And I don't want to say Marvel artists, but he's always sort of doing Marvel books. He's a great, I mean, he's not flashy. He doesn't blow you away, but I think he's a great storyteller, and I love the way he draws.
He's one of my favorite Thor artists for a really long time.
Yeah.
And he did Thor for a while.
Yeah, so we have Malekith. Is that how you say his name?
Malekith, yeah.
Malekith the Accursed, is going to be the villain in the next Thor movie this coming out in November. So he's going to play a big part here, and he's scary.
Yeah, he was featured in Simons and stuff, I think, that I don't remember.
Yes, he's been in that prison for a long time, and he breaks out sometimes, or he projects out from the prison.
He is a character that reeks of the 80s.
Yeah,
in his
design, but I don't care because I thought it was written really well, and there was a world built around him that works, that doesn't feel out of place.
He's almost like a terrorist here. He's
he's
leading a rogue band of dark elves against his own people, which Thor and his buddies have come to save. And
it was really fun again to watch Thor to go with the Warriors 3 or 4, I guess now. I was just reading this going, that's some Thor right there. You know,
and we got the great map at the back, and we're going to see all those different realms. I'm excited about that. And,
good about this is that he's taken different elements. Like the first story, the great God Bomb story was basically a real examination of Thor through the ages. And then this one is more like Thor as a part of the team. It's more of, you know, he's got the supporting cast. So it's really sort of a different aspect of Thor than the first one. So it doesn't feel stale. It doesn't feel like a retread of the first story. It feels like it's something different, but of course with the same great tone and dialogue that Jason Aaron brings to.
And the coloring was consistent, same colorist from before. And I think that helped make the transition from the other art.
Feel like some of the compositions, he's not necessarily aping Esad Ribic, but I think he's trying to make sure that it fits in with the tone of what he was doing, but still in his own style.
Yeah, I think it's consistent.
Yeah.
And there's even that, I don't know if this comes from the colorist or not, but it's like the pencil-y feeling.
Yeah, you can see the art bleed through again.
Maybe, was it inked? Let's see.
There's that shot of Thor coming through the Rainbow Bridge with his hammer in the foreground. You can see the sort of pencil lines on the hammer.
And on the first page, you can actually see the pencils on the panel borders.
Yeah. It's a really nice looking book. I urge anyone who may have dropped off not wanting to see Esad Ribic to come back on for this because
it's got characters named like Scum Tongue and you know crazy giant spiders and it's fun.
He ironically has no tongue.
The thing is, you can really see how much fun Aaron's having writing this, and you can tell if you follow him on Twitter. He talks about it all the time, but just even in the way it's written, you can see this is a hell of a lot of fun to write.
And now that he's got the Warriors 3, like. That's going to amp up the comedic potential for this. So
Thor's with Sif now, right? That's what's happening. Is that what he told Jane last issue? I don't know.
I didn't think it was her, but maybe aren't they like on again, off again?
Well, in the last issue, wasn't he seeing that the shield?
Oh, right. But she's going to be a new.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have no idea. We'll find out.
Jotunheim.
Tension.
Jotunheim.
Nidavellir.
Muspelheim. What's the dwarf one?
That's
in the right side.
Is that a D or an O?
It's a D.
Nidavellir.
You sound like the midget from Twin Peaks.
Niflheim. Nothing beats Svartalfheim.
Rustyautoparth.
Oh, that guy's just loving his life.
Josh, how can people help the show?
Go to ifanboy.com/Amazon and you can find an easy way to link to a place to buy lots of things where through little to no effort of your own, you will be contributing to the upkeep, the server space, all the stuff that we need to keep this show a well-oiled running machine. So go there and buy, if you haven't, for the love of God, you go buy the first trade or book or whatever collection is out from Jason Aaron's. Marvel's good with those. Are those out yet?
Do we know? There's a collection of there's a first part. There's gonna be two.
Get if you haven't read that, like, go get that for the love of the gods. Yeah. Again, that's ifanboy.com/Amazon. Just bookmark when you click the Amazon, bookmark that as your Amazon link and just use that. And you know, if you buy lots of things, then we will favor you above the others.
You'll be okay. Paul, you're a big Rogues fan.
Flash 23.3. And I guess there's going to be more.
Full title, please.
Sorry, Flash 23.3, nice. The Rogues. Is that what it's called? I don't have it in front of me.
Rogues number one.
Rogues number one, yeah. Okay, and there's going to be more Rogues. There's going to be Rogues Rebellion is coming up. I don't know if that's a mini or something. Anyways, I love the Rogues. I was very conflicted when they come out with new costumes and, you know, sort of younger and not as gruff, but also with powers. This makes an okay case for what they're doing with the Rogues, I think. I think it's important that these guys have this weird code that doesn't really make sense, that like Rogues don't kill and stuff like that. And Len Snart is still in the lead. He's way too good looking to be Len Snart, though. That's a problem. Like, Len Snart should look like, I don't know, like Stanley Tucci or something. Like a Hagrid Stanley Tucci. I don't know. Did I say Hagrid? I meant Hagrid.
It's a giant Stanley
Tucci. He's a giant.
That would be an interesting magic way to go with Len Snart is to make him a giant Stanley Tucci. Stanley Tucci is actually a great, you know, a guy named Len Snart isn't going to look like a supermodel. He's going to look like Stanley Tucci. But I enjoyed this. I thought it was fun. I think it was great, but I thought it was fun.
Yeah, I don't think it's one of the best ones. I don't think it's up there with what Charles Soule was doing with the Forever Evil issues we talked about previously. But I think it's a fun one. And if you like the Rogues, you can get. I love whenever it's not just about Flash versus the Rogues. It's about the Rogues in the lead, in the pilot position. And Len Snart is hurting because he's made some big mistakes. Like, he wanted to do this thing where they use this kind of machine to turn their weapons into give them superpowers, and it locked Mirror Master in the mirror world, and his sister was put into a coma, and now she does like these astral projections, but she pulled Mirror Master out of the mirror world in this, and now she's in a vegetative state, I guess, so they don't have contact with her anymore. I love these characters, even if they're a little bit watered down from what I'm used to and the characters I fell in love with and created Twitter accounts for. It was a while ago, but
it really was. Wow.
Do either of you guys read Zero number one from Image?
Yes.
I had meant to, but I didn't get to it. So tell me that
it was interesting. I enjoyed it. It's Alice Cott's new book. Mm-hmm. And what was really interesting about it was basically the entire book is part of the story. So the first page is the backside of the first, you know, the cover. And right. It goes to the back side of the back cover, and then the credits page is on the back cover. So there's no actual ads, nothing in it but the book. It was interesting. It was about basically in the future, you don't want to call them super soldiers because it has baggage, but basically enhanced soldiers.
Biomodified
soldiers, in the Israeli-Palestinian CIA conflict. I mean, there's all kinds of things going on here. It's basically, I think it was CIA, right, Paul? It was.
If you guys would read my eugenics newsletter that I send out, you'd know all about this stuff.
Eugenics.
Basically there's a guy.
Best laugh. I'm sorry. That's the best laugh I've ever gotten out of Paul, and I am just floating on a cloud right now.
Eugenics and you.
There's a guy.
Eugenics.
The agency.
Y-O-U.
From the agency, who's probably the CIA, who is tasked with getting this piece of tech out of this. Was it the Israeli soldier who's got the tech in it?
Yes.
Or the Hamas? I don't remember. But basically, there's a guy in the middle of a battle in Israel, and he's undercover, and he's got to get out before he's discovered. And it's like a long chase scene, basically. And it's got a little bit of espionage, a little bit of war stuff, a little bit of politics, a little bit of cybernetics.
Yeah, and it's framed by this, you know, he's older, it's 2030 something or something like that, and he's talking to this kid who's behind him with a gun to his head, and I think there's sort of a, I think going to be a thread about, like, child soldiers and the like experiencing war from a very young age, which is something that not a lot of us are, you know, accustomed to. But that is a very real presence for a lot of people in different areas of the world, and you know how that affects your psyche. And I think what's cool about this, I think there's going to be a lot of different artists that are jumping in and visualizing all of this. And from this issue, I think he's playing the long game with this.
Right.
All together, it's going to tell a really interesting story. I don't entirely know what to make of it with the first one, but Alex Cod is always really interesting.
It's definitely up your alley, Josh, in terms of...
I admit to. I was there on Michael Walsh art alone.
Image keeps putting out really interesting books, which is cool.
I think it's cool because it just shows like there's no, we're not bereft of ideas or of sort of cool concepts that work in comics. And so, and the Image seems to be getting all of them. And the only risk there is just flooding us with too much stuff.
Right.
But I could have worse problems.
It was good though. If you like that kind of thing, I would say check it out.
So I've got it. It's in my hand.
So speaking of the long game, Kinski number 3 caught up on this. This is Gabriel Hardman's creator owned book through Monkey Brain. And great black and white Gabriel Hardman art. He's taking his time on it, so it looks wonderful. And it's this, you know, I think did you guys read the first issue?
No.
I did.
No?
Okay. I did, and I'm terrible at keeping up with digital releases like this, so I always don't remember. I know that's bad, but they don't.
It's something that we're going to try to get used to and then cover more of in the future. Yeah. But with Gabe attached, I was like, I'm really interested in and that cover, really cute black Labrador puppy.
Really want to know what happens after the first issue, which I can do right now.
Yeah, it's a really weird book. I have no idea where it's going, but I have complete confidence in the storyteller. So and I'm captivated. It's so this guy basically sees this puppy and steals this dog. It's sort of a convoluted path to get there, but he steals this dog that he knows belongs to this little kid, but maybe not the most responsible parents. And it's getting in the way of his job. He's like it's this sort of traveling salesman sort of, and he has to go to a bunch of different meetings around the country, and he's always driving or in a plane. And this dog is and his weird sort of creepy obsession about keeping this dog and hiding the fact that he stole this dog is getting in the way of his everyday life. And people are looking at him like, what's going on with you, man? And they're going to take the dog back to the owners in this issue, and they have to stop because there's a lot of traffic, and they you know get off the off ramp, and
they're in LA, I assume.
Yeah, and so there's a bunch of RVs and stuff, and so they get off and at this truck stop, and they're gonna let the dog walk around, and the dog gets away and is running up these hills, and then I think in the final page is running off into sort of like a trailer park, what it looks like, or some kind of caravan. There's a bunch of RVs, and where is this dog? And now they have to find
Gypsies.
It, and the real hook was in that first issue where he says, no, it's my dog. Like, it's just this sudden, twisted taxi driver kind of turn for this character. And you're like, what's going on with this guy? Like, and he says he never had a dog before, but there's something about this dog that he's attached to it and wants to take care of it. And I don't know. I don't know
mine.
Where it's going, but you could borrow one of my 5 crazy dogs. That would be okay. It would be helpful, actually.
You're up to 5? You have like a pan flute or something? What's going on over there?
Do you have a pen for them? Do you keep them in a room? What happens?
They're all in different places. They don't get along. So
I'd love the idea that you have like a prison. Like you have to. This one's in A block. This one's in C block. The
it's
area
sort of how
it
is, and
like it.
And you have to like rotate them so you don't go out in the yard and everything. Yeah, it's
like I hate that dog's pee and I can smell it. Where is he?
So
like, it's like prison. They would shank each other.
Josh, the bounce.
Yeah, the bounce number 5. Now at first this was a Spider-Man who smoked pot.
Right.
That was sort of the first issue. That was your hook. And as we keep going into this, it's a bigger mystery of what is going on in this world where this stoner who basically tried out for a medical trial ends up with powers, and he's just trying to figure out there's something going on. All these other people are showing up who have superpowers, and this is unusual in this world. And it gets really trippy and metaphysical. It starts to feel more like the Manhattan Projects at a certain point. It's mm-hmm. odd, and I don't know what to make of it, but I find it interesting. And it's gotten more interesting as we go on. And this is it's classic Joe Casey stuff. Like, it's one of those things, like, if you were, like, into – I hate to keep bringing this up because he's done so much since then. But if you, like, you were into, like, Wildcats or something like that, this has – he's got that tone. It's a modern, intelligent superhero stuff that isn't – not Big Two stuff, obviously. I'm still at the point to be like, I like this and it's very good. But it's really interesting, and I'm very engaged. At the same time, the other side of that coin is that he's still doing sex, which is really interesting, and I really like it a lot. I still can't put my finger on this, but it's more than it seemed at first. And it's right on the precipice of going too far out there and losing its thread or grabbing it and pulling it back in and being something really cool. And that's the point I'm at right now. You know what I'm saying? That,
right.
That point of the comic book, it can go either way. And it's just towing the line, which is a really fun place to hang out. I was very vague, that whole review, but that's because I'm not entirely sure what's happening.
Paul, I've given in to Infinity. I've just decided this is the way it is.
Oh, yeah?
I'm not going to know everything. I'm not going to be super engaged in what's happening or the characters, but it's a darn pretty book. I didn't expect 2 issues of Jerome Pena in a row, so I'm along for the ride, even if the ride isn't completely engaging me. I think kind of emotional level.
Okay. Well, between Lanil Yu and Jerome Pena, I kind of really love those wide shots of sort of space opera battles.
Mm-hmm.
Like there is a sort of Star Wars fantasy quality to the spaceships and to the headgear that they're wearing. Like all of the tech, there's a level of the fantastic to all of that, and I really appreciate that.
Right.
You're just reading Infinity, right?
Yeah.
Okay. If you haven't read these yet, read New Avengers number 10 first, then read Infinity number 3. And all of those little panaways to sort of interesting things happening with characters, that's the stuff that's getting covered in Avengers and New Avengers, and to a lesser extent, like Captain Marvel and Avengers Assemble, things like that. That's where the real, like, human drama is going on. And I'm not going to say that it's, like, as character-driven or anywhere near as character-driven as, like, the Battle of the Atom stuff, like with Uncanny X-Men this week.
Mm-hmm.
That continues to be really strong. And, you know, some might complain that it's, like, it's just a bunch of people talking, but what they're saying is really fascinating. And I think that there's a lot of verb happening just through dialogue. I think there's a lot of action being driven by choices being made and alliances and breakups and things like that. So, but anyways, I like that these two events are happening at the same time. It's something different on either end of that. There's this big summer blockbuster thing with Infinity, and then there's something a little bit more human over with the mutants with Battle of the Atom.
Right.
I'm really happy with that. I'm happy with both of them. I probably do prefer Battle of the Atom, but Infinity, I think I guess I like it the most out of all of us.
Yeah.
And certainly Ryan. But
well, at least Ryan read it. Josh isn't even bothering, so I think you put Josh below Ryan.
Yeah.
Wait, well, I'm sorry, what?
Exactly.
So this is cool. I mean, I like that it's all these alliances with the different alien races. The Kree have just sort of bowed out and said, "Listen, we can't beat these guys," and Ronan the Accuser is, you know, I'm a warrior and I want to fight to the death, but
I like that scene a lot. That was really good.
Yeah, I also have to go with my empire and follow with what they're doing, and I'm going to have to stand down. And he's basically saying, "Die well, you guys.
Like, good luck.
Have fun out there. I'm going home."
I do really like the idea that a guy like Jerome Pena is drawing a giant, you know, crossover event book. You know, it is not something you would expect normally. I mean, obviously he's not doing the whole thing. He can't, but for right now, it looks fantastic.
And we're looking for Thanos' son. We're going to say Thanos.
Thanos.
Thanos' son is out there. I think he's in Iceland. And I think
he
most
likes
of the
warm waters. The springs.
Yeah. Stuff is that's over in New Avengers. It's all the Illuminati stuff, and there's some really cool stuff with Doctor Strange going on. He's been possessed by one of the one of Thanos' lieutenants, the Black Maw, Ebony Maw. I'm sorry, they have some cool names, but it is helpful that he has a Dramatis Personae in there, so you can and match all the faces to the names and stuff. And luckily, some of those characters are dying or or being pushed to the side, so the cast is getting a little smaller, a little bit more manageable. But I dig on this stuff. This is and I like all the sort of Game of Thrones-iness to New Avengers with the war between Wakanda and Atlantis and Namor trying to just stab Black Panther in the back. And it's cool.
All right, well, all those right. are the books of the week, and one of the things we wanted to do is start introducing some more discussion topics, and so one thing we found ourselves with is time to read, which we didn't have before. So I wanted to talk about, and you guys can chime in as well if you want, some of the trades I've been reading in the last week or so, sort of catching up on stuff I've been meaning to read for a while. Probably the most exciting for me was the final Northlanders trade, Northlanders number 7, the Icelandic trilogy, which capped off the 50-issue run of Northlanders from Brian Wood and Vertigo. This trade was both amazing, but maybe sad that would be no more trades.
Right.
Because I think Northlanders was a book that was one of the better books being put out there that wasn't talked about a whole lot.
Yeah, and I started reading the issues at the beginning, and then I dropped off for a while, and I came back. I think either, I don't know, I was at a better position to appreciate it, or he really just kicked into gear. But by the time I came back, it was in the 20s or something like that, and it just was good. Every single time. And that last arc, it was
the family trilogy where that goes from they basically land in Iceland, and
Paul Azaceta?
Yeah,
he was fantastic. I think Declan Shalvey did part of that arc.
He did the middle arc, which wasn't as good. He's certainly gotten better since then. And then Danish Zezel.
Oh yeah,
that was all wrong.
Jeje,
he was great too. The family through the years in Iceland was wonderful. I think one of the great things about Northlanders was that there wasn't so much a central story as it was just Brian Wood exploring the Viking idea, and you got to spend time with different families and see them through the years and go back to the beginning and start over.
If you're down with the flavor of it, this week's Conan was Wood and Azaceta.
Right.
He's basically said, well, since I can't do Northlanders anymore, I'm going to hire all those people to do this other barbarian book with me. So something to keep in mind. But no, you're absolutely right. That run out was just a great
amazing.
Batch of books.
I would recommend Northlanders to anybody. It was a wonderful series. Uh-huh. And he posted on his blog recently that he's going to do another Northlanders-esque series, but he didn't give any more details than that or where it would be or what it would be about. But
I wonder if that's in terms of like the structure of it.
Well, he said he'd done a lot of research that he never got to tell stories about.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know if it's also going to be Vikings or he's going to use it and transfer it to a different kind of story. But he said there was a lot of Northlanders left on the table that he didn't get to use.
Cool. So, I'd be all about that. And that's the thing with Northlanders, you can pick up pretty much any trade. There's like one that's like a sequel to another one, but pretty much you could just pick up any of them.
Yeah, they're self-contained stories. It's really, really and good stuff. Yeah.
I like that this segment is basically Connor catches up on comics we already read.
Well, we can continue that with Manhattan Projects.
I'm going to have some of that too, yeah.
I read the first two Manhattan Projects trades. Now, I'd read the first one before, but I reread it because it had been so long. And it's really great. I mean, we talked about it before, but I think especially a story this dense with all these different characters and all the craziness that's happening in the background. The second trade went off in places I had no idea it would go, mostly because when you guys used to talk about it, I would just zone out so I wouldn't be spoiled. But really, really, really great book. I mean, I'm really heartened that it's doing so well and that he's going to continue to get to tell the story.
I just love the totally black sense of humor.
Yeah. I have no idea where it's going.
Which is great.
I don't know what it is, and that, these are not complaints. Also, I find that it's one of those books that, and I know I've said this, it's one of those books that, for whatever reason, it looks so good in print.
Yeah.
As opposed, like digital looks fine or whatever, but when it's printed, like those colors that are non glossy, just sort of, it's such good looking. It's nice and
striking. Nice.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's exactly that. Yeah.
Finally, I read the first two Prophet trades. Again, I'd read the first Prophet trade before and I'd read the issues, but reading them back to back, I actually have some sort of vague notion of what the story is now.
Having
reading them all together and back to back, I have a much better understanding than I did in the issues, and that's saying not a lot because I had zero understanding, and now I probably have a 5 to 10% understanding of what's actually happening in the book. But
there was... I've sort of lost the plot on that one in recent months.
Read the collections.
I'm going to, but I remember distinctly having the thought, reading like I was in the middle of an issue, and I was like, even if I read this in trade, would it still would it make sense? Like, would it work? Would it hold together for me? Would it help at all?
Yes.
Like, maybe I have to die and then there'll be some kind of revelation. Like, I'll be floating into the light and then I'll know, like, it'll come to me. And now he's playing with like some crazy 90s stuff. He's got like other Liefeld things in there.
Yeah. That's where I start to get worried. I mean, yeah. I was okay when they brought the helmet in, but I like that it's a strange little world that doesn't really play. I mean, obviously he's got Bad Rock in there and characters that, you know, it wouldn't necessarily matter that, you know, they're from the Liefeld era if you didn't know. But I worry that the more and more they come in, the more it'll change the story. But so far it hasn't, at least in the first two trades. So I'm pretty happy about it. It was a really entertaining read all the way through.
Mm.
So it still remains weird, but good.
I am also catching up on stuff. I'm catching up on I have the first two trades of Revival.
I haven't read them yet.
A Rural Noir by Tim Seeley and Mike Norton. This is great. I read an issue and I found that it's from the middle of the second trade. I just randomly was like, I'm going to try this out. And I was like, this is going to be something for me. Going back to the beginning, this is great. It's a great ensemble cast. I love that whole rural noir thing. We all love Justified. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of in that milieu. It's not exactly Twin Peaks, but... And I'm not a huge Twin Peaks fan. It gets a little too surreal for me. This is just right. And it kind of reminds me of just in terms of meeting the characters and building up this world, it reminds me of like not the earliest, but when they first started sort of forming that ensemble in BPRD. And it's not that it's, you know, a government agency or anything, but in meeting all of those characters and learning what they're like and learning all their tics and getting to care about them. I was like, I haven't felt this in a while, and I realized that it was from getting to know BPRD so many years ago. But this is terrific. I think if you like The Walking Dead or
definitely
what
got
else?
That feel
or you like know, even I Vertigo stuff.
I put this in my top five books.
That's when you did that. That's when I saw the trades out because I was like, okay, clearly something's going on here.
It's just a great story, and there's a lot going on and there's a lot of characters, but it's simple. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean that in a bad way. It's just, it's really clearly told. There's something going on, but you get to know this handful of characters. You know who they are. Like, it's not one of those things where there's a bunch of characters and you can't keep them straight. You know, and it's been coming out really regularly, and you know there's the girl who's the cop, and there's her sister, and there's their dad who's the cop boss. That may not be.
The sheriff?
That may not be what's... I couldn't remember if they were sheriff.
I believe he's the sheriff.
The chief?
Yeah.
Okay, so she's a deputy and he's a sheriff.
He should
I guess.
Be just cop boss.
She wants to be in the beginning. I know she wants to be a detective, and then he assigns. We say what this is about. It's a small town, and there's Revival Day. So there's this one particular day where the people who died come back from the dead, and then they can't die anymore. They sort of have a healing factor, and it leads them to some messed up stuff.
But it's not as good as it might seem. And there's it's messed up. It's like Tim Seeley's definitely got a head for horror movies, but he's also really good at clearly laying out this road. And then, you know, I think Mike Norton is doing really, really great work. Like I said, like all those characters are just people. There's no superhero costumes, and I know who all of them are, and they have personalities. It's wonderful acting and storytelling. It's what one of the things he does best.
I'd say it's like Lock and Key meets Northern Exposure. That
you
kind of
so want to come up with that tagline for it.
Yeah,
you need to compare it to a
that's how I understand the world.
That's a
Josh. You need to do a book called Cop Boss.
I think. Then I get sued. Axe Cop Boss.
Yeah.
Damn it. So, that's the next.
So Paul, is that it for you this week?
One more quick one.
Talking
one
trades.
This is just a graphic novel. It's one volume. Peter Bergting, who wrote The Portent, a Swedish writer and artist, and also he's a novelist. He's written some
Domovoy.
Fantasy novels. Yeah, Domovoy. And this is sort of it's sort of like I'm going to do it again. Like a Mike Mignola-esque Puss in Boots. It's this story.
I can't say I didn't expect you to say that.
This young woman named Jenny who has this talking cat and this family legacy. Her grandmother may have killed this ogre and gotten some magic out of that. And so there's these sort of gypsy-like, sort of like Romany sort of little fairy folk guys. And they're like right out of like In Bruges. Like, it's like they're very funny, but they're also these like cold-hearted hitmen, elf demon things, and they're after her because their boss wants her to atone for her family's sins, and it's very Swedish. It's very it's got that sensibility. It's got like that girl with the dragon tattoo kind of sensibility of the of that culture and of family heritage. And the art is beautiful. He does draw those demons kind of like those Mignola eyes. Like they have those Hellboy eyes.
That one character actually looks like Hellboy.
Yeah. And the color is just wonderfully like moody, and then it surprises you. Like I'm looking at a page with these houses at sort of like at dusk, and it's like this blue sort of periwinkle, and then this bright, vibrant orange pouring out of the windows, and something very, very ethereal about it. He does great ghost stories. And what I like about it is that, you know, I said Puss in Boots, it's kind of like that, but it's one of those fairy tale things where it's not direct. It's not like fables. It's pulling from lore, but then going in a completely original direction. And it's lore that you might not be familiar with. So I've had
this on my stack for a while. I'm a little annoyed that I didn't read it. Dark Horse.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Those are some of the trades I've been reading lately. We'll bring this back every now and then when we have stuff to talk about as we read trades. I've got a whole giant stack that I'm finally getting to break into, which I'm pretty excited about. So more to come.
So let's get to one. We talked for a long time. Let's get to one quick audience question. Sean wrote in and asked, what is the origin of Go Screw?
Hey, Go Screw.
Hey. You know what? I've actually had a bunch of people ask me this, and I realize that I don't actually know. My first instinct is that it's something somebody said in Band of Brothers, but it isn't.
I thought it was from the letter, the World War II letter that the general wrote to.
He doesn't say "go screw" though. He says "nuts."
Oh, that's right. Then where did you get it from?
I think I just said it one day in the context of that thing, and we've made it into our lexicon.
I think other people say that.
I don't think. Yeah, no, I don't think we made it up, but I think that we conflated. That it was a thing from, but basically, like there's a part in Band of Brothers where the Allies are surrounded, and the Germans send the general a letter. This really happened. It was in Bastogne, I think.
Yep.
And the Germans sent a letter to say, "Listen, you're surrounded on three sides. Just give up now, and you won't all be slaughtered or whatever." And then the general gives a speech, and he's like, "You know what I wrote back to him? Nuts." And he just wrote "nuts" on the letter and sent it back to the German general, which is like this big badass, "Wait, we're American" moment. And me and Connor think that's really funny. And at some point, we turned that "nuts" to "go screw."
Yeah, you're right.
And we've been using it ever since. And I plan to continue using it.
This is great. It's very satisfying to say.
Yeah, it's got a nice vintage quality to it.
Do you even think that came across to the Germans?
Like, no, they were just
exclamation
like...
exclamation point? Like, what is that? Like, that's not one of our colloquialisms.
what is nuts?
Peanuts or what? Don't know. Should we shell them? Shell them. Nuts. Yeah. Schnell shell.
And they did. Yeah, that's where it came from. It came from nowhere.
Yeah. That's
like
that's
many things in the show. It came from our weird brains, and now it's never going away. Not that we made it up, the phrase, but we started saying it for no good reason. So there you go. You can write us in at contact@ifanboy.com if you've got more questions about the weird things we say. In the meantime, Paul, we got a couple of shows coming up.
Yes, we do. We're going to be talking about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the new show from the fine people at Disney and Marvel.
Yeah, Paul and I are going to do a special edition show about that probably the day after the show's air.
Yeah, it's on Tuesday. So
not something we're going to do every week. We're just going to talk about the pilot.
Just want to talk about the pilot and what we think about where it's going. Yeah. And then sometime in the future, working to get our team together for Batman Year 100 Booksplode discussion. So gives you some time to go out and grab the book, maybe... Head on over to
ifanboy.com. We're trying to wrangle a special guest for that show, and it's proving not problematic, but more tricky than normal. So it's going to be a little bit of a delay on that one, but it's definitely happening. So look forward
to that. It's the actual Pope.
Yeah, the actual Pope.
He's open to these things.
He's a more open-minded Pope, so he's interested in what Paul Pope has to say.
Because previous popes, very rigid in what they think a Batman book should be.
Ratzinger was like, no, this is not my Batman. My Batman is Adam West Batman, and there's no other Batman. So that was a hard one. We couldn't get Ratzinger for any Batman discussions.
He just wrote back, nuts. And also, if you're watching The Breaking Bad, I'm still talking about that over on Fuzzy Typewriter. Go into fuzzytypewriter.com or type that into iTunes. And every week, every Monday, talking about, and there's only two more, but I'm excited that they're 75 minutes each.
Are you going to retire the show after Breaking Bad ends?
No, we're going to talk about other stuff.
Okay. You can go to ifanboy.com to comment on this show to find out all about the other podcasts. Like Paul just mentioned, you can find them all at ifanboy.com. You can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/ifanboy, and at Facebook at facebook.com/ifanboy.
You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. And if we don't keep talking forever, we'll get to more of those. You can leave a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. With any comments, questions, concerns. I have a voicemail. It's a good voicemail, and we've kicked it about 4 weeks in a row now. We're going to use it soon.
We'll get it. We'll get it next week.
We're going to get to it, buddy. So don't you worry. You're right, and you're a good question. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
888-FANBOYS.
Listen, this was a long week that we are a bit discombobulated over, so we promise to be better next week. That's our promise to you, the American people, and also the people of the world and the universe. Yeah.
My message actually go screw. Nuts.
So that's it for this week's show. I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
Nuts. What is this nuts? Whoa!